Amen.
It's in your namesake that we pray.
Amen. I'll lead us in the pledge now. The flag's up there at the other end. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good deal. Cameron, who's first?
First, I just want to apologize for the gum in my mouth. I've got allergies. If I don't have it in there, I'm going to start coughing. My voice is a little deeper than usual. Kind of got that Johnny Cash sound to it. But it's not me normally. Now, most of you don't know me, so I'm just going to start by telling you about myself. I'm the youngest of five children. My dad was a truck driver. My mom worked in a school cafeteria. I do have a Tree County connection. My mom is from Tree County. She's a Tyler. I think we have a Tyler in here, don't we? That's a Kyler, isn't it? That's a Kyler. Okay. Kyler. Yeah.
You know Mamie Tyler?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm. Matter of fact, my middle name is Tyler.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Her sister, she had five brothers and one sister that were also from Tree County. Her sister's name was Bluebell. My mom's name was Avenel. So you said Avenel and Bluebell. I thought those were just the best names. She also had five brothers from here. I had to write them down. I couldn't remember them all. Edward Tyler, Gene Tyler, Thomas Tyler, Dallas Tyler, and Lonnie Tyler. And they all had lots of kids and grandkids. So if you know a Tyler or a Fowler, I'm probably kin to them. I'm a lifelong resident of Princeton. I graduated from Colwell County, got my master's degree from Murray State University. I taught school for 32 years. For the first 20 years, I was a fifth grade teacher. The last 12 years, I was administrator. I was a transportation and facilities director. I coached wrestling for several years. I think Dixie Jones was a coach here at the time. I don't know if any of you know Dixie. But some of the wrestlers that stood out were the Stevens brothers, Homer and Ralph. They were pretty tough. Also coached football for over 20 years. Dixie Jones was a football coach then. And the player that sticks out to me was a guy named Al Baker. We could not tackle him. He was just tough. For the last 8 years, I've been in county government. I was a magistrate for 4 years, and I'm currently in my fourth year as a Colwell County Judge Executive. And it's been a pleasure to get to know Hollis Alexander. He's been great to work with. As Judge Executive, I've had a great opportunity to know what counties need. And for Colwell County, it's been infrastructure. We have blacktopped over 75 miles in the last 3 years. We're getting ready to do another 25 miles. And we've also worked with companies to get internet out to our rural parts of the county. You know, just because you live in a boondocks does not mean you deserve a decent road or good internet service. So we're working on that. I also believe in a consumption tax. What do I mean by that? I believe in getting rid of the income tax. Think about it. If you work, you pay the government. And we've got a dire need for workers these days. In Colwell County, our two biggest factories, Treehouse and Hydrogear, there are always dozens of workers short. And about 30% of our population are not in the workforce. And we need to start getting these people back to work. It's been a dire situation. To me, that's one of the biggest problems we have in our area, finding enough workers. So if you get rid of the income tax, you're giving everybody a raise. Look at the states that do it, Texas and Florida. You know, their states are growing. Look at the state with the highest income tax, California, over 13%. They're losing population. So we're going to have to start doing some things differently. Like I said, infrastructure is so important to me. That's the one thing that serves the whole community, not just one special group. And that will always be, and I've said this for years, we've got a road going through Colwell County called 641. We do not need that road. It's going to bypass Fredonia. It's going to hurt that town of Fredonia. And I've said it, and Walker had nothing to do with this. This happened way before him. He has been nothing but helpful to me. He's called me the first day this district changed and said, anything I can do to help you, I'll do it. He has been great. But this road, I've always said the rule of thumb, if you don't have enough money to take care of the roads you got, stop building new roads. We don't need them. And look at the roads we have now. When you drive on some of these state roads, I mean, everybody knows the difference between a state and county road. I know you do. If it's got paint on it, it's a state road. That's the rule of thumb I use. But some of our roads are just beat all the pieces, and I just believe in putting every dime you got into infrastructure because it serves everybody. I wrote down a few things. I usually end by saying running for office is not easy. You put yourself out there. And with social media these days, it can be pretty difficult. So I say this every time. I wish Walker nothing but the best of luck. When I coached football, I could not stand poor sportsmanship. Could not stand it. And I said this the other day. If he beats me, I'm going to walk across the field, shake his hand, and help him the rest of the way. That's just what I'm going to do. And I know he feels the same way. Caldwell County has changed over the years. It's solid Republican. If you're a Republican, you're probably going to win. He won't need a lot of help. But it's hard to win as a Democrat now. I've seen so many changes in the last 4 or 5 years, and I know it's probably happened here too. Don't worry, I go to church all the time. I hear that. But, and I do always end by saying, I'm not the most talkative, greatest personality in the world. My wife tells me all the time, I've got a personality about like a doorknob, and I know it's true. But if you get in a conversation with me, you're probably going to do most of the talking. But I always say this, I've got 2 ears and 1 mouth, and I get a whole lot more out of listening than I do talking. So I will end by saying that, and thank you for this opportunity. Thank you.
Am I up? That is the. Well, it is an honor to be in front of y'all again, and I have really thoroughly enjoyed representing Trigg County, Christian County, and now soon to be Caldwell County. Over these last 6 years, I look forward to meeting new people up in Princeton, Fredonia, and covering that whole county also. It's weird. Well, I'm Walker Thomas. I think most of y'all know me in here, and my wife Sandra came down with me. She just got back from Louisiana. We were visiting grandbabies, so she drove back to be here because y'all mean that much to us. We are down here a lot, as you know. This is my third time today. Started off with a presentation at the Justice Center and then lunch up at the Farm Bureau and now here tonight. So we appreciate everything y'all do, and y'all are an active county. Keeps us burning up the road. So, but I have served for 6 years, and I'm hoping to be able to serve again for y'all. The state representative job really requires a little bit of experience. After the first term, I served for my first 2 years. On the third year, they gave me a leadership position. So I am chairman of Veterans, Military Affairs, and Public Protections, which is you know, there's only so many leadership positions out of 100. And realize what that spot does. It is the last defense for some of these crazy laws that come through. I mean, the Second Amendment rights come through my committee. And it's not my committee. It's y'all's committee. I'm just represented as being chairman. Pro-life. The pro-life bill, HB3 that we just passed, the ominous bill, banning abortions after 15 weeks, that comes through my committee. I lobbied to hear for that over the summer and was able to hear it last summer. And then sure enough, we got that pushed through. Now, Daniel Cameron's going to have to fight for it because automatically it got struck down by court. But at least for a couple days, the abortion clinics in Kentucky stopped. So for a couple days, we saved a few lives, you know, and now, of course, they got to stay. They found a judge to do that. But, you know, some of the issues we're facing are coming down from federal government. We're being attacked. I mean, we can lose our liberties if we're not careful. And y'all see that daily. And our state is the next line of defense. We have to have good representatives. We have to have a good governor in a couple of years. Next year. there's some things that we really, really need to do. And keep good people up there fighting for you. We passed some great legislation. Larry and I have agreed to work together, and that's what's so nice about these debates. First of all, we're talking in front of nothing but Republicans here, so it's good to be able to share our ideas and things too. But he mentioned the tax structure. We were able to pass HB 8 this year, and originally it was tied to trigger mechanisms. And what we're trying to do is get the income tax to go to zero. And our biggest competitor is Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee constantly catches a lot of business, and it's spilling over from Nashville. Eventually, we want it to trickle over the line and come here, but we lose Fort Campbell soldiers all the time, and I hear it all the time. I'm with the military all the time because, you know, I represent them. We got to keep these people, when they retire after 20 years, why are we taxing their pensions? I have filed a bill 6 years in a row for tax-exempt military pensions, and even though it never got passed, I think it had something to do with the tax structure that we're leaning to. So HB 8 is really neat. It's what we've done is we have trigger mechanisms. If the state of Kentucky reaches so much, then automatically we're going to go from a 5%, which we already went from 6 to 5. That was a couple of years ago. We're going to go from 5% down to 4.5%. And then each time we meet one of these trigger points, we'll go to 4%, 3.5%, 3%. And eventually, we're going to try to get to zero. Zero is our goal. And we want to be like Tennessee, Florida, Texas, you know, some of these non-income taxes. We don't need to penalize people for working. You know, if eventually, what we've done is we've expanded the consumption-based tax a little bit, not raising it yet. We're still at 6%, so we still have that advantage over Tennessee, but we're expanding what we tax a little bit. You know, so we're trying to do that. We've gotten the low-hanging fruit over the last couple of years, so it could get a little tougher over the next years, but every time we do that, then that helps us get to that next trigger even quicker. So those are some of the things. One thing too is Second Amendment rights. We just keep hearing, and it just seems like our national media is like, you know, anytime there's an issue with a fight or someone gets, you know, someone takes a gun somewhere and shoots someone, so automatically, you know, we need to ban these firearms and things too. Well, these bills that are coming through, as a chairman of VMAP, I get to stop them before they ever get heard. So what happens in Frankfort, there's over 800 bills filed just in the House. Not the Senate had 300 or 400. So these bills, they used to refer them to our committees and we could kill them or something like that. Now we have to lobby for them. So I have to sort through 800 bills to sit there and say, this is a good legislation. Let's get this thing heard. Let's push it through our committee and let's see if we can get it on the House floor. And I hate to say, I do that for some Democrats and Republicans. There was two Democrat bills that I heard, and I know as Republicans, y'all don't want to hear this as much, but not, I mean, we don't own the right to only good bills. There's some good people up there on both sides that have some too. One the governor signed, one the governor vetoed. I got one pushed all the way through, and the governor vetoed one of his own members' bills. So it's interesting up there. We do need some experience. It's great to have fresh new ideas and young people and energetic people to come up there, but the experience too. I passed 3 bills this last session, one for education. We passed, and how a bill starts is I had a phone call from Beverly Fort from Hopkinsville, and she works for the school board. And she said, Walker, we got to try to retain teachers and get new teachers in. And so she and I worked on a bill. We worked with Murray State, and we got House Bill 277 passed. And it was passed. There was not a single no vote. in both chambers. Got all 138 members to vote for it and the governor to sign it. And what it does is you're going to be able to become a teacher within 3 years. We're going to start you as you're still in high school and try to get you into the teaching career. And you'll be able to take classes more in the evening. Murray's going to work with the teachers and trying to get you educated and get your degree. You still have to take your praxis test also. So it's not watering it down, but the individuals will be able to work in the school system while they're getting their degree. So this is so important because that's the best experience they can get. They'll shadow underneath an experienced teacher and hopefully get their degree a little bit quicker, and hopefully we can retain some of them. If we grow our own teachers, because that's what the bill was titled, Grow Your Own, if we can grow them here, then they're more likely to stay here. Trigg has a wonderful school. We love it. I work a lot with Bill Thorpe. So y'all are already in pretty good shape with schools there. So, but we'll look forward to questions. I don't know if that was 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 8. I don't know if anyone's keeping track, but we will. You have 1 minute. Look at her. She was keeping track. I wasn't sure if there was a sign going up or not there. So. But like I said, it's an honor to serve y'all. This really is a public service. I think Larry will find out, or both of us will. You burn up the roads a lot. I'm usually up in Frankfurt, not even during session, anywhere from 5 to 8 times a month. That's a lot of road time. I was sitting there doing the math. That's 48 hours worth of just driving back and forth per month. So. You do burn up a couple days. So it's a pleasure serving y'all. We'll look forward to some questions. Should we just stay up here? Does Larry want to come up? Should we just, would that be best? And just hang out and then?
Sure.
Does anyone else have any questions that they'd like to have me ask? Well, I have lots, so don't.
You have lots.
I have two cards that have come in.
Oh, good.
The first card, well, that doesn't count all my questions.
Oh, well, no.
It's okay. Right. The first question is about voter fraud and election integrity and how you both feel about if you feel like Kentucky is on top of election integrity, how you feel about the use of the machines. And I will let Walker go first because Mr. Curling went first last time.
So you want me to go first? Okay. We passed a bill again this year. Michael Adams is doing a really good job as our Secretary of State. I mean, before, with Allison London Grimes, there was only up on that. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, we purged people, and she got a judge to put them all back on the roll. So we have really fought to try to tighten down election security. I know we both agree on this. You have to have an ID. You can't go to a library and check out a book without an ID. But this year we tightened it even more. And one of these things was something that was brought to me. Our son actually called me, and he's in the political world too. But he called me and said, Walker, do you realize that these polling places? So you know how we have these hubs now? Remember how we used to have 15 precincts all over Trigg? Now we have maybe 5, 7, and I'm not sure.
Super centers.
They're super centers. They were not having to report those super centers at a precinct level. So here's what you have. You have a room filled with, say, 10,000 people. Okay. Now someone is committing fraud in that. How do you find that? How do you find that fraud? But you have 10,000 people in one room, but you were able to divide it up into 20 different small groups of only a couple hundred each. It's easier to find the fraud. So in this bill, now these super centers are going to have to report at a precinct level. So if we sit there and see a precinct voted at 110%, got a little issue here. So we can focus the fraud a little bit on that. We also are put some more money into voting machines. So all of our machines across the state of Kentucky are going to eventually have a paper backup. And we got to start some of that. We can go on and on all the fraud and things like that. And I know y'all have heard about it. But the state of Kentucky, we are trying to tighten it down. We will get it. Eventually, over the years, we just keep working on it. People have other good ideas, and we keep filing another bill. So.
Good. And Mr. Curling,
I agree. Kentucky has done a good job. Some of these states sent out ballots just to everybody, absentee ballots. You don't want to do that. You got to request a ballot. In Caldwell County, I can tell you, our elections are pretty fair. The voting machines, matter of fact, I helped count the votes one time on the absentee ballots. We had a lot of absentee ballots, though, more than we ever had before. And the absentee ballots seemed to favor another party. So there wasn't any fraud. It's just that the way the system was doing, it was sending out absentee ballots to so many people. And now we've got it down to where you had to request your absentee ballot. And that's going to work a whole lot better, a whole lot better. And I agree totally with I got to have an ID. When I was young, I needed an ID to do everything. But, yeah, you need an ID. I agree. And cutting down, we've cut down on our precincts, too. But, of course, with a small town, it doesn't make that much difference. You know, everybody knows everybody. We still don't have large crowds. We have it, they spread out enough to where we don't have that bad of a situation. But other big places, I'm sure they do.
Yeah, that was one of the concerns is the big cities, population centers, and how all that works. The next question from the same person is, are you willing to, and I will start with Mr. Curling.
Okay.
Are you willing to stand up to these issues of transgender, of letting men participate in
sports? I said I
coached
for how many years? I know a lot about athletics. You do not. Title IX has been so great for women's sports. I remember a time we did not have basketball. Women did not have volleyball. They didn't have softball. The average male in the United States is born 5'9". 5'9". The average female is 5'4". You already got a 5-inch advantage. So, yes, it's not right. There's a lot of other issues I could talk about, but no, that does not mean happen.
That's what's nice debating him. We both agree on most of these things. We passed Senate Bill 83, which was, let's protect women's sports. And it's lunacy that we're even having to vote on these issues. These social issues are crazy, but I don't think we're done. I mean, you know, there's this push to talk to kids in the kindergarten, first grade about transgenderism and gay and this and that. This is nuts. You know, we're watching what's going on down in Florida. But Ron DeSantis is, I think he's right. You know, why are we teaching our kids sex ed by the third grade? I mean, that's all that bill did was say you don't teach this stuff before fourth grade. I kind of think it needs to be pushed a little farther. But so we did. We passed Senate Bill 83, and that was protecting our women's sports. And that is just, I mean, I worked with the sponsor. What that did is there was two bills coming. We sometimes will start something that's really a priority bill from both sides. The Senate will start something, the House did too. Ryan Dotson carried it over in the House. And I was with him when he was presenting in committee, just because it's such a big topic. I mean, and just crazy. I mean, so we did get that passed. Governor vetoed it, and believe me, we loved overriding that veto. And sometimes it's really funny because, you know, sometimes you get so many votes until the governor vetoes it, and then you get more to override his vetoes. So, but that is something I think we're both on the track. And I would love to eventually see that. For me, it just seems crazy that some of these parents, it almost seems like child abuse, if they're going to start letting their 4, 5, 6-year-olds start taking these hormone blockers and things like that, they're ruining this child's life. Yeah. Most of these kids will grow out of this. And so I mean, that goes on and on, too, but that's not just in women's sports.
And I will say that a lot of this, what was a swimmer, Mia Thomas or something like that?
Yeah, Leah Thomas.
Okay, think about it. He's 6'1". Would he be 6'1" if he was born a female? No, take 5 inches away. Big difference. Big difference. I've been involved in athletics all my life. Big difference between a male and female athlete. And he has proven it's wrong, because when you go from 500 and something – ranked in the world or nation to top three, that's proof it's not fair.
It is. He was a perfect example of it. And it looks to me like he grew his hair out and shaved. I can't see a difference from the guy and the girl pictures. It's crazy.
I think I need to start with Mr. Curling this time,
right? I think it was back to me, but either way, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. We both are kind of tagging back and forth, and I guess we're not really rebutting. We're just enforcing each other's theories.
I'll start with Mr. Thomas then. And this kind of blends into one of the questions I had, too. And I wrote questions down based on what we've been hearing in our committee meetings and from people in the community.
Sure.
And this question talks about standing up again to global warming, the fights on fossil fuels, fertilizer prices. There really is talk of depleting our food supply with the lack of good fertilizer. Just all these kinds of issues with the climate and what's going on. Where are we with agriculture and how do you feel about climate change?
I'll start, and that's a long topic, but we'll start with the climate change. It's crazy, the theories that they push. You know, Al Gore's running around, oh, we got to save the world in 10 years. Well, it's been 10 years. It's been 20. It's been 30 as he flies around in his jet, his private jet, blowing away every, you know. Some of this stuff is nuts there. These electric cars that these big push, of course, you know, it's great that we're getting some battery factories. You know, we just got one in Warren County that's going to be a $2 billion plant, and one up in Glendale, up around Elizabethtown for Ford batteries and stuff. But these are going to come at cost, too. Eventually, there's going to be the waste of the batteries. I mean, they haven't figured out how to recycle these things. These solar panels that are coming out, I mean, there's no recycling them yet. I hear over in China, there's stockpiles of waste of these solar panels, too. So we do need to be mindful of the environment. But I think you can definitely go overboard on all that, too. Now, leaning towards the issue with the fertilizer, that goes to the issues over in Ukraine. And that's probably why Russia wants that territory. I mean, it's not only the fertilizer. It's rich in nutrients from all kinds of different things that make chips for cell phones to all kinds of different things. So we have to watch that. No one wants a nuclear war or war with Russia, but you know, we have to kind of monitor. This is kind of above Larry and my pay grade. This is not really a state issue, but it is going to come back to our local farmers. And I think some things like we're doing, at, you know, putting $300 million to expanding broadband to help our farmers to be able to farm fields right through the night because they'll have broadband that will steer these tractors and stuff. I think that's where we'll have to help to offset some of the costs on some of this nitrates and stuff that I know the farmers know it's coming. It's expensive.
Thank you. And we need to give you plenty of time to answer questions.
I just want to say I love the broadband bill. Getting these co-ops involved. You know, we've signed a contract with Pinerol Electric. We're going to do it with Kenergy. The thing about a co-op is they do it for a service. They're not looking to make a profit. If you had companies like AT&T, they're not going to do it. They're in it for a profit. But them allowing the co-ops to get involved in running this internet, that has made a big difference to our farmers. Oil prices, you're talking about, anytime oil prices go up, everything's going to go up, especially fertilizers. So you know my feeling about that.
Yeah.
And what's scary is asphalt. Did you hear, like, I mean, we're trying to pave roads and fixing I-24 now as you head into Clarksville and things like that. You'll knock your teeth out of your mouth. But asphalt is made by oil products. And now, you know, so the miles of road that Larry and them are getting ready to pave.
We got it at $62 a ton last year. We're looking at $80-something a ton.
See? I've heard up to a third.
Cuts our miles out.
Yeah.
It's a big hit.
So you can only do so many miles for the same amount of money. And so it's an issue. It's inflation's here.
Thank you. The next question is, and I'll start with Mr. Curling. Why are you more qualified for this position than Walker Thomas?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to. That's a hard question. Probably 40 years of public service. I deal with people on a daily basis. I talk to people on the phone. I go to their homes. I've been doing this for over 40 years. I listen to their concerns. I hear potholes every day. I hear dogs every day. I hear electric bills every day. I get 50 calls a day. Everybody in Caldwell County has my cell phone, but that's why I want them to call me. I want to know what's going on. And it's just 40 years of public service and work ethic. I've worked my entire life. Cut tobacco, laid blacktop, construction, hauled hay, built silos for 8 years. I was a block layer. I did that for 8 summers going through high school. Everybody know what a silo is? Concrete silo. Those concrete blocks. All day long, I did this. All day long. 110 pounds. But it helped me in my athletics. So, work ethic and just public service experience.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas.
Well, I really believe experience matters. Up there, I have been able to, like I said, I think I was telling y'all earlier, pass 3 bills, but had my hands on probably 8 to 10 others. So as a chairman, sometimes you're handed some bills like, hey, this is a priority for the National Guard. This is a priority for Campbell. And those are the things that, and I am not one to sit there and take them and say, oh, I'm just going to run to myself. There's a few chairmen up there that do that. I believe in finding the right person. About 3 or 4 years ago, Speaker Osborne tasked myself with passing compacts. And compacts are basically license agreements, like if you're a speech pathologist, you can practice in other states. So it's agreement between states that you can use the same credentials, like our driver's license, perfect example. Well, that wasn't something, I could have passed all the compacts myself because I was now the resident expert on it, but I found key people that might be in those fields that it's better. I mean, I found a firefighter to try to push the EMS compact. I found an educator to push a teacher's compact. You know, it's so having that ability, having those connections, you know, 100 of them or 99 of them are all my good friends, not including all the senators over there too. So some experience, it's like I said, it's a balance. You need the new people, but you do need some of the people that have been up there a few years. Because what happens, Kentucky, we have, it's called our LRC, and Legislative Research Council. And what you find is if you have term limits and everybody's up there, you know, rotating, then the knowledge is with the establishment. And that can be scary too, because that's non-elected officials. So there's a blend where you have to have experience, but then the new ideas fresh coming in too. For myself, I feel like I've done that. I feel like it takes a while to get to leadership. I feel like I can really do some good and fend off some of these crazy bills that the other side are filing. They're filing these red flag laws, and I'm not hearing it. And I could get some flack, you know, from their side, which I like and I'll take. But some of these, you know, I can be a stop to them. So.
Well, I think I start with you this time.
That sounds good.
This question is about the consumption tax. And the person that put forward this question feels that it hurts people on a fixed income. Property tax is up. Roads are full of potholes, inflation is up. A consumption tax would hurt fixed income people. And how do you respond to that?
Well, I do, and we were aware of that. And if you notice, the consumption tax did not go up. We're still at 6%. Now, we did tax some other services, but I don't know how many of you people use limousines. You know, we tax limousine service. I'm sorry, we tax lawn care. So there are some that are things like that. So what we did is we still left our sales tax, our consumption-based tax, that's what that is we left it at 6%. But on a consumption-based tax like Tennessee, you know, close to 10% down there, it taxes everybody. It taxes the drug dealers. It taxes, you know, you can't hide from that. Income tax, it's a productivity tax. You're taxing people to go to work, and that's not the right method. We need to get that down. If we can get to 3% or 3.5, 4 or something like that, we're going to be very competitive with Ohio, Indiana, and some of them because they still have a little bit of an income tax. If we can get to 0, then we get competitive with Tennessee, and that's what we need to do. We need these soldiers. When they retire after 40 years, these guys are 20 years. They're not retiring. My son-in-law is going to retire, and he's going to be 41. Do you think he's done working? No. But he's the one. We want his family in Kentucky. Their kids will go to our schools. They'll be attending U of L or UK, and spending money, maybe raising their families, and it gets perpetual. So that's why I've pushed for trying to get to 0% state income tax.
I will say some states on consumption tax, they do not tax food products. There's different ways to do it. And I know if you're on limited income, you're probably not go out and buy a yacht. So there's different things you can tax. And food is one thing a lot of states do not do. But again, I say, if you don't get to a consumption tax and get away from the income tax, you're not going to compete with some of these other states. And I've said, we have a dire need for more workers. It's the biggest problem besides drugs that we face in counties.
Thank you, and that that's all the questions that were submitted. I'll ask our chair, how many more questions would you like to do?
Till I get tired.
Hey, I have a shorter drive home than Larry does. So. Well, no, we're probably about equal right now. Right. Yeah. Okay. We'll go as long as you need there.
Okay. Researchers are telling, and I'll start with Mr. Curling.
Okay.
Researchers are telling us that young children have been set back in their learning and development by 2 years with the masking and the isolation from COVID, which is a whole other subject. Mm-hmm. What should be done in Kentucky to turn this around and get young children ready for success in school?
Not a whole lot you can do. You've already set them back 2 years, unless you want to go to summer school again. You can't close schools for 2 years. That's another reason for the internet in the counties. They were doing homeschooling. A lot of our kids did not have internet service. We had to put up hotspots inside the city so they could come in. A lot of them could not do it. So a lot of them are not going to catch up. That's just a fact of life. You can't keep them out of school for 2 years and expect them to catch up. It's just not going to happen. Unless you have summer school the rest of your life. You know, that's a mistake. Should never happen again.
And I totally agree with that. We passed legislation. You know, our governor painted the state of Kentucky with a big paintbrush. He made everyone wear these masks and all that. And you can't do that. We should have done it with a scalpel. And what we did immediately once we got back is we passed the authority back to the fiscal courts. And the school boards and everything, let them make the decisions if you want to make mask mandates and things like that. And automatically, a lot of school boards lifted their mask mandate. There wasn't, I really feel like there was more developmental issues with our kids than the safety of those masks on their face. First of all, you can see my mouth moving. Well, okay, now what? You know, these are our kids that are learning. Look, she's looking at my mouth. Aren't you? Yeah. But that is so important in their developmental stage. And that is, we have to protect that. Unfortunately, we passed another one, Bill HB 51. It passed the House, but it died over in the Senate. We tried our best. And actually, Lynn Beckler, who represented Caldwell for a while, it was his bill. And that was putting the mask mandate at a family level. It's your choice. Do you want to wear it or not? Do you want your kids to wear it or not? I really wanted that one to pass. Caleb is a perfect example. It's crazy up in Louisville that you walk in the classroom, you have to wear it in the classroom, but you don't have to wear it in the halls.
Right.
It's nuts. And that, you know, and then you had young kids that they would go to school with the G.I. Joe mask and come back with Power Rangers. Okay, that's safe. They exchanged masks. So this, I, to me, that was one of the biggest farces over the last couple of years, and I think our kids are going to be paying for it for years. Now, to fix it, we expanded that reading recovery bill, so we're going to teach teachers how to help kids get ahead and try to at least get the reading scores up. So.
Great. Let's see. Who do I start with?
Usually whoever's talking last is who you start again with,
right.
I think
that's
is how it works.
That's what I was thinking. Some states are passing laws to make churches essential to stay open in case of another health emergency. Is that something that's being talked about in Kentucky, and would you support such
a
bill?
We already passed it. It's HB 43. Shane Baker is a good friend of mine. He and I hit it off. And perfect example, remember how I said that great ideas come with young ones, new fresh ideas? He was a freshman. He came and he filed HB 43. But what he did is he came to me and he said, Walker, let's file this together. So he and I were lead co-sponsors on that. And please look it up. It's wonderful. How in the world can we have these COVID restrictions, but yet you can drive to Fort Campbell and the casino's open? But they closed our houses of worship. Right off the bat, when Andy did that, you know, 2 years ago and stuff, remember when he sent state troopers to our places of worship to record license plates? Mm-hmm. Well, on my committee, that's the good thing, is I made the administration come in and testify why they did that. Now, they gave some lame answer, but, you know, it's executive privilege, I guess. But those are the things that... We passed that bill, and from now on, they won't be closing our houses of worship unless they close Walmarts and the casino and the liquor stores and the vape shops and everything else. You can't keep those essential and not houses of worship. So that's already a bill, and the governor signed that one. Can you believe he signed that bill? That was, I think he knew he was in the wrong, and when he came back, he's like, well, if I'm ever going to get reelected again, you know, but he signed our bill, and I was shocked on that. I thought he'd veto that one. So,
Mr. Curling, did you have a comment on that?
Oh, I agree. One thing we've learned during this pandemic, you cannot force churches or businesses to close. They need to make that choice on their own. Let me tell you how important the churches are. We had a tornado back on December the 10th. The first people on the ground helping us all over the county were churches from all over the country. They were tremendous. We had a group called Christ in Action come from, I think, Arkansas. They tore down all these houses that had to be tore down for free. They'd push it to the road, we'd pick it up and take it away. Of course, we get reimbursed from FEMA. If it wasn't for the churches, we would still be in a dire need. They were such a blessing.
Thank you. Mr. Curling, we've all heard about the big infrastructure bills, and I know infrastructure is a big topic, and we've all heard about the big infrastructure bill that was signed in Washington. How do you think that will benefit Kentucky?
Don't know yet. I haven't seen the bill, haven't read it. But anything, as far as I'm concerned, infrastructure, anything you can do to give us money on roads and internet, we're going to take it. I hear it every day from constituents. When I go talk to them, all they want, the things I get, I want a decent road. I want somebody to be there when they call 911. And we put so much money in the roads. And I just think it's so important. And like I said earlier, infrastructure benefits the whole community, not just one special group. So all the money they give us, we'll take it, and we'll blacktop every road in the county. We won't build any new roads, but we'll take care of the old roads.
You know, that was a $1.9
trillion
dollar bill passed, that, and then we wonder why we have inflation. Some of this is crazy. That there's a lot hidden in that bill. When Rand Paul, you know, shows it, and it's about this thick, and it's presented the night before they got a vote on it, some people don't realize that infrastructure bill, some of it they're going to pay people's broadband bills with it. There's a lot in that. Now, saying that, state of Kentucky does get to benefit off of some of this. We have two major projects that we need to get past. Well, actually, three. We have some big bridges we need to do. You've heard of the Spence Bridge. It's a tongue twister up there. The double-decker going into Cincinnati. That's a major corridor. Northern Kentucky is a lot of our growth. That needs to be replaced. $2 billion. Okay, and now we all are excited about I-169 and I-69, which is going to be big for Trigg and Christian. And that was one thing I got designated my first year was getting I-169, Pinerol Parkway, turned to an interstate. We're still trying to get it fully shielded and everything, but we need a bridge up in Henderson, too. We have started the process of getting the roads along with Indiana down to the riverfront. So all we're missing is that bridge point. Now, in our budget this year, we set aside enough money to pull down funds from the federal government. We knew that was coming because it already passed. So we set millions of dollars aside because, you know, with federal government, it's a match. You know, and it's usually they'll pay 70-80%, some cases 90 for cleanup and stuff. But we got to find our 20%. We wanted to make sure that's there. And so that is set aside once the money starts coming in.
My last question, and I'll turn back to the audience after I ask this. A big concern, especially with people getting older and the importance of needing long-term care facilities for older people, what the state needs to do to be more on top of the quality of care in long-term facilities for the elderly. And I'll start with Mr. Thomas.
Well, that's always, we have a wonderful senior citizen, and I think she does a wonderful job running it, and I enjoy walking in there and seeing some of y'all play cards. There we go. She still didn't know who won that hand and foot game the other day, but we do need to do more from seniors. And I mean, because we're all getting there. You know, I got a few more years. I don't know when you've made it, haven't you, Jim, there? But, you know, and that is that the baby boomers are retiring, and we do. So we are trying to work on some of those issues. You got to be careful. It's a private industry thing. You don't want to step on toes, like, you know, our nursing homes here in town that, you know, so it's a little touchy there, but we are still trying to put money into seniors because we do have to take care of them too. So we got a young generation coming ahead of us. So
I will say most of the money we put into our senior citizen center. We put, I forgot, maybe $20,000 a year into it. Most of the long care facilities, they are privately owned and insurance take care of it. As far as the state, I don't know what y'all do. As far as, I don't have a clue. If I sit here and act like I did.
The thought was, too, that what the state does as far as oversight for quality and abuse prevention. And
yeah, I know on the local level, most of it is run by private businesses.
Mm-hmm. Just one more issue that I heard as we were getting ready to sit down is the rise in crime. Especially in Christian County. I think I'll start with Mr. And this will be the last question if there's no other questions. Start with Mr.
99% of the people in our jail at Caldwell County are drug-related.
Yep.
Every one of them. So it all starts with drugs. Drugs lead to child support not being paid, theft, and yes.
Family violence.
Yes, violence against another person. So you've got to solve the drug problem first. And how are you going to do it? You know, how are you going to do it? This sounds silly, but when you start seeing the churches lose people, the jails start getting people. That's just my feeling. I don't know the answer to it, but it's all drug-related, every bit of it. You go over there at Caldwell County Jail, you cannot pick out one person that has done something, and they wouldn't have done if it wasn't for drugs.
You know, I was honored to work with Chris Fugit, Representative Fugit. He's a retired state trooper, and he's a state rep over in eastern Kentucky, and we passed a bill that makes it a Class D felony for harboring fentanyl. That's the big killer right now. And they're mixing it and everything. And this will kind of be my closing statement, because this is something that Republicans, some are divided on. For me, as a conservative Christian, my moral convictions will not let me expand gambling. And the marijuana issue, and that's, to me, and in this room, I guarantee there's probably someone that thinks we need to expand and get into medical marijuana or something like that, but that's just another gateway drug. My daughter lived out in Colorado, and I've stopped by one of these medical facilities that are handing out, you know, because it's legal out in Colorado. Well, everything's legal out in Colorado. But I stopped by, and the guy came out and talked to me. And I asked him, I said, well, tell me a little bit about it, because I could not go in, because I didn't have a Colorado driver's license. But he came out, and I said, so if someone pregnant comes in and asks for this because they're nauseous, what do you usually, oh, yeah, no, that's one of our biggest customers, pregnant women. And I'm sitting there going, so what is that doing to the fetus? Yeah. The studies aren't there. We passed a bill this year that's going to let U of L and UK study the issues of marijuana, and let's get some long-term data, what this does. It could have some medicinal benefits, and it might not. It might just be another gateway drug. I stopped at a state trooper out in Colorado, too, and I said, listen, tell me, marijuana, medical marijuana, what's your opinion? And he just looked at me and said, worst mistake we ever made. So I know this is divisive. I mean, if you poll people, you know, there's probably more for it than against it right now. But these are my moral convictions. Until they prove different, I just don't think we're ready for it yet. And I think it needs to come down from a federal level after more studies have been done. So.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any more issues or any other questions?
I have a couple on there. Since you were talking about drugs, my whole family's messed up on drugs.
Oh, no.
And I am a libertarian. No way we're going to really stop it now. But if you're going to legalize drugs, they probably all need to be legalized. And if you do legalize any of them, they'll have to bring back county workhouses. And when people are acting up, they need to go, just like, you know, me and you were a kid. You went to the house of detention, you went to county workhouse, and you worked a while. And that's your drug rehab. Classes at night, GED, whatever. You can't have legalized drugs and have people being laying on the streets, being whacked out, minor theft, and all the other things.
Yeah.
You got to have a control, and they're not going to get that part. And being a concealed carry permit, and believing strong in the Second Amendment, anytime, I was glad to know that you're on the committee. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Is every time those sorry people talk about taking guns, you need to throw in their face at least once a year, sometimes twice. I hear on the radio, and the radio lady can vouch for that, somebody kills somebody in Oak Grove or Hawkinsville, or a guy comes from Clarksville and kills somebody in Hawkinsville, and they just got out of jail and they killed somebody 4 years earlier. Mm-hmm. I mean, before anybody even talks about the Second Amendment, they need to say, what happened these 5 or 10 years you're supposed to get mandatory for committing a crime with a weapon, let alone killing somebody with a weapon? Well, that's in the news. Am I making this up? I don't know. Yeah. I don't really know what the news is.
Well, a couple of years ago, I was one that really pushed for constitutional carry. Mm-hmm. Savannah Maddox actually filed that bill, and it was going to die. They was not going through, and I lobbied leadership with her and got that thing revived. We passed constitutional carry. And what that means is any one of you can have a firearm there, whether you have it concealed or not. It is your right. It is defined in our Constitution that you can do that.
Constitutional carry is now the law.
It is, yes. Anywhere in Kentucky, you can stick. I can have one in my back pocket without concealed. I have my concealed, but because you be careful. You know, if you do that, you know, some states around us are not constitutional carry, and you can get in trouble for carrying. But if you have your concealed, it switches out with other states and everything. But yeah, we passed that a few years ago, and I was trying to get this passed this year. Like I said, it went through the House to make it where if the federal government puts down these red flag laws and crazy, you know, some of these things, trying to ban some of our rights and saying, oh, well, no one needs, you know, 10 rounds to go deer hunting or something like that.
Yeah, we do.
Well, I know. But that's, so unfortunately, it made it through the House, but not the Senate. So, but we'll try again next year.
I'm confused. Is
constitutional carry is the law? Yes,
which
it is.
Which law didn't
pass? We tried to do sanctuary state. Remember, Larry, did y'all's county vote as a county to do sanctuary county Second Amendment rights?
No, we passed a resolution.
A resolution,
yes. And I don't know anybody on a gun in Caldwell County. If you live out in a rural part of the county, you call 911. How long are you going to think?
20 minutes.
At least. Yeah. What are you going to do, sit and wait on? No. It's kind of serious.
There's the story of the farmer that had the watermelon patch out there, and every night he would have watermelons stolen. So the next night he stuck a sign out there and said, one of these is laced with cyanide. You choose. Well, that's the same thing with Second Amendment rights. You know, it's like, you know, 90% of you might not have a gun, but one of you do, you know, and that keeps crime down. It's like, yeah, more than one probably in this room, so.
And what, Mr. Thomas, you had said that last response was your closing?
That's fine. And I think we both talked enough there, so.
Mr. Curling, would you like to say
We'll go as long as you need.
So I just thank you for inviting me to this event, and I appreciate Walker and we're Republicans. We're good.
Yeah.
Can I ask the judge one last question?
Yes, go ahead.
You're the expert on that, paving and all that.
On what now?
On paving.
Paving, yeah.
They've done it. I've only been in Kentucky now, from Jack, Alabama now, for 29 years. So I'm a newbie here.
That is newbie
here. And I'm a country boy, and I was surprised at how narrow the roads were.
Yeah.
County roads.
Terrible.
Yes, county roads.
And they've all gotten, I don't know, 8 to 12 inches wider on each lane. And what's happened, they've all been paved up good, and both specifications call for 4 or 6 inches of asphalt. But in the past, most states I've been, they give you by an inch or two, and then it's all crumbled.
We put 2 inches down what's called binder. Binder has a bigger rock in it. And the reason we do that, we have logging trucks, we have trash trucks, and it seems to hold up better.
We can't get them out to Turpin Creek in our area to do the road. It's terrible. I mean, not only puddles, but you got the swales now where the tires run.
We've got 320 miles of county roads, not state roads or city roads. And I'm trying to get it on a 16-year rotation. When I was master, we wasn't doing that many miles, and I got to figuring you've got to do 20 miles a year just to keep up if you have a good road plan. Because if you don't, you're going to end up with a situation where you're going to have to do about 100 miles in 1 year. You can't afford it.
So you're working on changing chip and seal to blacktop?
We have chip and seal roads, and we try to stay away from chip and seal.
We got chip and seal. We'd like to not have chip and seal.
Yeah, chip and seal, we try to stay away from. Chip and seal is cheaper. If you don't have enough in your budget, then yeah, chip and seal. And we have done chip and seal. If you've got a house on the end of a road, just one person, and this is bad to say, so that's about 8/10 of a mile. We put down a chip and seal every once in a while, not very often, because we know we're going to have to come back and do it again eventually.
Does
the
judge get a conversation?
If you need that.
Sir, what I was going to get at is the roads, 30 years I've been here, they've gotten higher, about 6 or 8 inches higher.
Need a building.
Wider.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is the shoulder, ladies that have to be on text and whatever they go off, it's over if you go off the
that's
side.
That's what I've been arguing with the state about. You know, besides building a new road, make our new road, our roads we got wider, you know,
yeah,
add a couple
just
of feet on
the
side.
The gravel. Yeah.
But if it gets too high, you're going to have to move.
But you need drainage, too.
Oh, I know, it's going to go right
up. We haven't got to the situation when we started milling yet.
Okay, that's just something I think you
need to be considered. Mr. Curling, did
you have anything else to say? No, I don't. I've said enough. My voice is about gone.
That's why I handed him a water there. Yeah. Thank you. Maybe I think.